everybody, and welcome to Players Endeavors, episode 5.
Cinco.
De Mayo.
Nah, that's not what I meant, dude. Come on.
Welcome to Cinco de Mayo in September the 4th.
I don't even think it's like half Cinco de Mayo.
No.
You can have Christmas in July, but I don't think there's Cinco de Mayo in September.
So, we're here to bring you a very special episode.
You say that they're all really special.
This one is probably the most special.
Why?
Because we're finally doing our super show.
Oh, that's right.
And this may be longer than one episode. We'll see.
We might only be half an episode.
I just beat The Last of Us, which
took you a long time.
It takes me a while to play through games because Saints Row the Third.
I was gonna say you better not say because of work, because I've seen you playing Saints Row the Third instead of this game. So.
But Dave Simpkins finally
had time to beat it before you were able to beat it.
He beat it already?
He beat it before you, after buying a PS3 to play it.
No, he bought a PS3 to play Journey.
No, he bought it to play Last
of Us. He bought it to play Journey, and then he got his PS3, and I was sitting in his office, and I'd played through half The Last of Us. I was like, Simpkins, you should really get The Last of Us.
I told him to get The Last of Us, like, when he was talking about getting a PS3.
And he was like, okay. And I described the game to him. And he was like, and then he got it, and he played the first, I came in after he played the first half hour, and he was like, this is one of the best games I've ever played.
Yeah, he beat it before you, like, by several days.
Oh, wow. Well, he has more free time than I do.
No, he doesn't.
And,
he is a professor. He has no free time.
I'm joking. He doesn't have more free time than I do. It just took me a while to get through, because.
I don't know why.
Because I would put it down. Because something would happen that would, like, be very, like, shocking. And then I'd go get into something else, and then I'd be like, I really want to play more of The Last of Us. Because I really, that Last of Us is probably one of my favorite games, honestly.
Of all time?
Reflecting on it, it did so many things that I've always wanted to see a game do. But we'll get more into that in our favorite section. So,
no, we won't.
What the other thing we're talking about,
things
we're talking about today, are two other games, that we both really enjoyed. The Walking Dead game.
The Telltale one.
Not the crappy one, Survival Instinct.
Well, you've never played it, you don't know if it's crappy.
Fine. The one that has been reportedly been crappy, named Survival Instinct.
You could just say the third person one.
It just looks crappy. And
I think you're just being racist.
And, the Spec Ops The Line.
Which also took you, like, 2 years to play. I told you to play that last summer.
So my backlog is always really, really large.
Yeah, well.
I also got distracted by Zelda games in the middle of all that.
Zelda games.
Yeah.
It's true.
But there's also a lot of other games this year that I'm really looking forward to. Like, Beyond Two Souls.
Call of Duty Ghosts.
No, Watch Dogs.
You didn't watch that. There's a new gameplay.
I know. Today. I saw.
I was addressing the audience in this aside about the fact that there's a new gameplay trailer or gameplay segment up today on their Facebook page. That's really cool. That's all I was gonna say.
Good.
And then you cut me off by saying I know.
No, I meant. I haven't watched it yet.
You should watch it, because it's really cool.
I didn't watch it because the moment I had to watch it was right after I beat The Last of Us, and I was like, I don't feel like thinking about another game right now.
No,
it just didn't feel right.
You should have.
So, and I'm also excited for Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag, Pokemon X and Y, Link Between Worlds.
That I'm interested in.
Super Mario 3D Land, Super Mario 3D World, or the co-op game that you're going to play with me.
Oh, right. Clearly.
And, yeah, I think that's most of the games I'm excited for. Oh, and GTA 5.
GTA 5 looks like it could be awesome.
I'm pretty excited to see if it's going
to
be awesome.
I don't think I'm going to have time to play it.
Yeah, well, I really liked GTA 4.
That was like a 60-hour game, though.
I've only played GTA 4 and GTA Chinatown Wars.
Those were two good ones.
Although
you should go back and play 3.
So I've really been liking Saints Row the Third lately.
I don't know if that will translate well to GTA.
And I like open world games in that vein. I guess not. I mean, I know that Saints Row is a lot more ridiculous because.
And GTA 5 is aiming to be like amazingly serious, I think.
Yeah, which is really interesting.
And then let the online be the more silly part. Yeah. But yet still awesome.
Yeah.
It's gonna be cool.
Yeah, I'm interested in that as well. I'll probably
watch Let's Plays of it. So many other things to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of games. And then the PS...
Like, Watch Dogs.
And then the PS4 is coming out, so...
Like, Watch Dogs is gonna have to play Knack. Huge.
Because I think I decided I'm getting a PS4.
Oh, until next week when he decides he's getting an Xbox One.
Yeah, I'm pretty set.
Didn't you see the update? It's faster. Faster processor.
I don't care.
It's faster.
Specs don't matter.
No, the Kinect 2 is really the selling point.
The Kinect 2 is really awesome.
Like, that's what's selling it to me. That and, like, my Xbox profile will transfer, so I'm, like... I'm semi-emotionally invested, plus the Kinect 2 looks amazing.
That's a lot of my reasoning for the PS4, actually, is
and Titanfall!
I'm pretty emotionally invested in the PS3.
Titanfall.
And, yeah.
And Titanfall.
And
It comes out this fall, doesn't it?
No.
Next year?
Yeah.
Darn. Man, like, the two things I'm really excited for don't come out the next year.
What's the other one?
Destiny?
Oh, yeah, I'm excited for Destiny.
The one that has a... That's, like... That's why I'm afraid to get into, like, GTA 5, because as soon as Destiny hits, I'm never going to play anything else for, like, months, I hope. So I'd rather play that.
Yeah, Destiny's going
to... Although I'm going to have to play alone, which is going to be sad, unless my other friends back home get it.
I bet it's going to support cross-platform play.
I'd be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe PC One connectivity, but Xbox, PS4, I don't think so.
Well, if it comes
competing
out...
Competing markets.
If it comes out for PC, and it works with the Xbox One, I'd probably get it for PC. Over the PS4.
I don't know what I'm getting it for. Well, I'll probably get it for the One, because it'll look better than my PC.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So let's go into what we've been playing. Maybe that'll be a new segment to do, what we're excited for.
A new segment at the beginning. Blake and Dustin get off topic because they're excited about other stuff that isn't.
I'm really
topic.
Excited for Beyond Two Souls.
Is that a PS4 exclusive?
It's a PS3 exclusive.
Oh, well then I'm fine.
Yeah. Where Ellie grows up and sees the world.
What?
Because Ellie looks like Ellen Page.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You should stop now.
I also didn't realize in The Last of Us that Nolan North voiced one of the characters in it, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, you could hear him. Him and that other really famous voice actor who's in, like, every game that I can't remember his name right now.
David Hayter.
No, not David Hayter. No, I can't remember his name.
Anyway. So, what we've been playing, I'm going to start this week.
Oh, mixing it up.
I just beat The Last of Us. I've been playing a lot of The Last of Us.
Shocker.
Because I thought I was 3/4 of the way through, but I was actually only half the way through, so...
I know, it was funny.
I beat it, though, and it made me cry more than any other game, probably.
Even Final Fantasy VII?
Final Fantasy VII only has one moment where you where some people, then I might have been some of those people, got upset at a certain point. Not gonna spoil?
You're not gonna spoil Final Fantasy VII... But we're going to do an entire episode where we spoil The Last of Us, The Walking Dead, and Spec Ops The Line.
Yeah.
Oh. Alright. We probably should have made that clear at the beginning of this. Well, I guess people could listen
warning! To spoilers!
We'll do it at the segment.
We'll do one for each section. And I've also... I beat Saints Row the Third, and I completed all the districts... And last night I finished off all the assassination missions.
You played last night?
Yeah.
Instead of playing The Last of Us so that we could do our podcast, you played Saints Row the Third again.
Yeah, I was in a bad mood. And blowing things up and stuff in Saints Row makes me feel better than The Last of Us.
Oh, yeah.
You know that's true. Like, would you rather be like, I'm not happy, I'm going to go play The Last of Us? And
yes.
And then be like...
Because you have a duty to this podcast.
I'm really not happy. I finished it, though. And I finished
barely.
It.
Barely. You beat it, like, literally an hour ago.
Yeah. But I finished it in time for the podcast.
You did, it's true.
I'm gonna do the DLC for Saints Row the Third, and then I think I'm picking up Saints Row 4.
You're not gonna have time for Assassin's Creed at that rate.
Why?
You poured, like, all of your free time into Saints Row 3. If you get Saints Row... Well, first, if the DLC is gonna take you, like, 10 hours, probably.
No, I looked at it. All the DLC is, like, an hour each. Oh, look at what I can do. There's more assassination missions.
Exactly.
The assassination... Exactly. The beginning assassination missions were a lot more fun than the end ones, though I finally did what I'd been meaning to do in Saints Row the Third, which was I got a... This is going to sound like I'm a terrorist if the NSA is listening. So... I had an assassination mission to take out a helicopter, and I think they want you to do it, like, using one of the normal fighter jets or other helicopters, but something that I had been wanting to do for the whole game, and I'd tried a few times, was to crash a plane, and I'm playing with the advanced plane controls, because those are more fun, because you can do barrel rolls.
Oh.
And so I went to the airport, I hijacked a jet, I flew the jet up into the air, went to where the helicopter was, and it was kind of like this battle, because the helicopter can turn and maneuver a lot quicker than a jet can.
The jumbo jet, anyway.
Yeah. And so, I was trying to, like, maneuver, and finally, I think it stopped kind of in midair, just hovering, because it was kind of like, alright, you caught us, probably, or something. But anyways, I then just crashed my jet into the helicopter, succeeded in the assassination, and then I jumped out and landed my base jump. So that was pretty awesome. And then
have you ever tried jumping out of a jet and, like, shooting the pilot out of the helicopter and then watching it crash? That would be kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I really wish you could do in Saints Row the Third is get back in your air vehicle in midair.
Why can't you?
I don't think you can. I've tried. I might just be doing it wrong, but...
You can in Battlefield 3.
Just
so you know.
Might have to play Battlefield 3, because I own that now.
Yeah, it takes years to download.
And then the other thing I did, and this is going to be a little embarrassing, is I couldn't, for the longest time, land the jet ever after I took off in Saints Row the Third, because I think it's the... At least for me, it's the hardest vehicle to really control. So I finally managed to do some landings. I did two. Then I was trying to be cool and do, like, a flip in the air and then land. And that didn't go well.
You crashed a lot of jets, I'm guessing.
I crashed. And after that, I was just like, you know what? I don't need this. So then I just went to bed. Otherwise, I don't know if I've been playing anything else. I've been playing, because I played through most of The Last of Us, which was amazing. That game is just fantastic. It does so many things right.
Is it?
Yeah.
Boy, we should do a podcast about that.
And,
or something.
We're going to have to talk a lot about The Last of Us. Like, this game might be the next 10 podcasts. It's going to be a mini-series. The Last of Us, an in-depth analysis.
Oh, why don't we write a paper, too?
Sure. So, otherwise, I've also been working very hard on a little game called Memento.
What was that? I feel like you mispronounced it.
Memento, which is our current project, which you'll find out more about soon.
Will we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to do a raffle for...
First time hearing of this. Can employees of the show enter the raffle?
For a demo.
Oh, Can I enter?
We're not doing it until we're done with the game.
Oh, well then, should you just give out the game instead of demos? Because we have the game then.
Well, it was going to be the game.
That's not a demo, that's just a game.
It's going to be a demo of the full game.
So it's the full game?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's going to say demo.
On the box.
On the box.
Yeah. That's good. Are you done?
Or like,
about things you played?
Not for retail. I'm going to put that on there.
Review copy?
Yeah, review copy only. Please... If you do not give 5 out of 5 stars, please return.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
That's good. Good work.
Yeah.
So, I've been playing pretty much exclusively...
Payday and Payday 2.
Yeah, exactly. Payday the Heist and Payday 2.
The Heist.
It's just Payday 2. I don't know why they called it Payday 2 instead of Payday the Heist 2. I don't know. Anyway,
Payday the Heist.
Me and my roommate Matt have been playing just a lot of Payday. It's a really, really enjoyable
200 hours.
I don't think 200 hours
in a week.
I don't think that's not possible, I don't think. Anyway, I don't know, Payday 2 is just a really, really fun diversion type game, because I haven't had a lot of time to, like, sit down and game for large amounts of time, so playing something that's a little more co-op multiplayer.
You play for a pretty long time, though, every night. Like,
it's like an hour to an hour and a half at the most.
He plays for 2 to 3 hours every night.
That's not true.
Okay. I don't think he realizes it, but
I look at the Skype call time, because that's how long I know I've been on.
So, a couple hours.
I would say an hour and a half at the most.
So I'm going to check.
Okay, well, you can check, and I'll defend the point of an hour to an hour and a half. Weekends and Fridays, though, I'll play for a long time. Anyway, but I think they're both really fun. Payday 2 is a pretty big improvement on Payday the Heist, but they're both a lot of fun. Really, it's pretty important to have real people to play with, because you can do a lot of really cool tactical stuff, especially in terms of stealth and making heists that are really cool. If you have actual people with you, but you can play by yourself, it's just a lot harder. But I don't know, it's been a really fun thing to be able to do. It's kind of like Left 4 Dead, but more fun and with cops. I don't know, it's a lot of fun. I've been enjoying it a lot. Other than that, I don't know that I've played much else, actually. I've been meaning to get caught back up on Resident Evil 6, but I haven't had a lot of free time for anything other than
Payday for a couple hours every night.
Like an hour and a half at the most.
16.4 hours in the last 2 weeks.
That doesn't even average out to 2 hours a day. You're wrong.
Yeah, but you haven't been playing it for 2 weeks. You've been playing it for a week.
I think I've had it for 2 weeks. No, I don't think I've had it for 2 weeks. We bought it last week. Sometime.
It's been a week. It's
a little... Okay, so for a week, it's 16... But then weekends are longer. Those are like 4-hour sessions.
Weekends are longer.
I play for like 4 hours on the weekend.
Okay.
Okay, so average on my...
He's obsessed.
It's really good. That's the point.
I mean, I played 98 hours of Left 4 Dead 1, so I can understand, but...
I have 200 hours in, somehow, I have 200 hours in Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. I don't know how that happened.
I have 300 and...
I think it's because I left my SP on sometimes.
Oh, I never did that, because I was always really OCD about the time, so, like, any game... I still do this. I do not like leaving games on, because I don't like false reports of how long I played. And I also like knowing how long games are. There's this great website, if anyone's compulsive like I am, howlongtobeat.com, and it contains a backlog of its database, and people report how long it took them to beat games, and it has different categories, and it gives you the average. And I use that for about every game I play to know how much time I have to allot for it.
I think that ruins the fun, because then you know when you're near the end, which is, I don't know, I don't like doing that.
Yeah,
like, if I would have done that with The Last of Us, I think that would have ruined it.
Oh, for The Last of Us, I lost track of time.
Because
so
I just...
It didn't ruin it for me.
I don't know. I don't do that. Like, I like to know approximately sometimes, but most of the time, I'd rather not know.
I'm really
because you told
compulsive.
Me the time for Resident Evil 6, and now I'm all, like, bummed out, because...
See,
now I know how long
I didn't
is.
Know. I just
really
assumed
sad.
Everyone likes knowing how long their games are that they're going to be playing.
I like to know after I beat them.
Oh, I like knowing, like...
But otherwise, I feel like, because once you know, like, approximately how far in, you're like, oh, now I'm 3/4 in. Oh.
I can usually tell. Like, for me, it's never a surprise.
Well, yeah, I'd rather the game let me know than, like, I just know.
Because I can always tell because, if you think about it from a game design point of view, like, the way I knew I was never really at the end of The Last of Us was, when it felt like you were at the end some of those times, is because... My skills weren't, like, far enough, and there was still, like, too much stuff in the area. The one thing, though, that I was listening to Rev3 Games talk about it, just the first half of it, The Last of Us. I guess we're transitioning. And something they point out is that the game's very episodic in nature.
It is. I agree.
And that it could have even been done as an episodic game, which is really interesting.
Could have.
Because they have it very well segmented into summer, fall, winter, spring.
The seasons, you might say.
The four seasons.
Correct.
Too bad they didn't score the game. Probably because two of them are dead.
Ouch.
And...
It's a little kick for all you music fans. Kick her in the teeth.
And I think that's a lot of the reason why with The Last of Us, like, you're always like, oh, is this the end? It's like, oh, there's another season left.
Yeah, that's what excited me. This is why I don't know. Oh, like, spoiler the time start thing. Now. Like, I don't know what the. I don't know. That's why I like the time thing. That's why I was like, I always liked it being like, oh, the game's not over. And I was like, yo, that's cool. Now the story's going to continue. Instead of being like, oh, well, I know I'm three quarters
but,
of the way.
But for me, I didn't ever really. Even though I had an idea of how long the game was, I totally lost time when I was playing that game. Like, I lost.
That's not, like, that's not defending but, your point. That's just saying.
Oh.
That,
oh, no,
lost
I still,
track of time.
Oh, I still think, I still don't have any problem with knowing how long a game is, but I didn't know with The Last of Us. I don't have any point to defend, I just don't. I don't feel the same way as you do, I guess, about that.
I think it's silly.
Oh. You also don't have a real job.
I don't have a real job?
Yeah.
But being a student is my real job.
Producer.
No, being a student is my
so,
real job.
So,
producer is what I do for fun.
Anyways, so The Last of Us.
And The Walking Dead.
And The Walking Dead.
And Spec Ops The Line.
I could just talk about The Last of Us, like,
Then maybe you should talk about the other ones first.
So...
Because otherwise you'll just talk about The Last of Us.
Something... I think there's... But I think first we should explain what all these games... what business all these games have being put together like this.
Well, they don't really.
We
just kind of threw them into a pile, pulled out three names, and
yeah, we did this random hat trick. Actually, we the real reason is all three of these games, and I think even Journey could be included in this list, but we're not mentioning Journey because it does things a very different way.
It's not violent
than
enough.
These three. Yeah, these three have a very interesting take on violence.
Ultra violence.
Yeah, well, Journey, the violence is not as ultra.
It's physical and mental in nature.
So, it's emotional, really.
Yeah, kind of.
So, anyways,
we'll deal with that later.
These three games, really have pushed different philosophies and concepts in games, and have really, through their story and through their world and through their gameplay, at least in my opinion, have really pushed the boundary for the type of experiences that you get from games.
Yes.
And they have definitely all been some of my favorite experiences in the last year.
I made you play all of them.
No, I was gonna play the Walking Dead game. I played the Walking Dead game without you. And I also was gonna...
Oh, that's right, you played
with also,
your girlfriend and I beat it.
I was also gonna play The Last of Us. Regardless, because that game looked amazing. But Spec Ops I wouldn't have played otherwise.
I don't know.
Okay, whatever.
You would have played it because it was a Naughty Dog game.
Yeah.
So you would have played it.
Yeah.
Not because you thought it was a good game. But
well,
then you heard
no,
me talk about
I assume
it and you were like,
I assume that Naughty Dog games are good games.
Yeah, that's a dangerous assumption.
Not with Naughty Dog. So!
Oh!
I can't...
Started Golden Abyss.
I can't wait for... They didn't make it.
They helped.
Ben Studios made it.
They helped.
They might have helped. But Golden Abyss isn't a bad game. It's just not the other
it's
ones.
Just not a, it's just not a good game. But it's not a bad game. But it's not a good game.
So, I can't wait for Uncharted and The Last of Us Racing. Because I really want to have Joel racing against Nathan Drake. I just think...
That'd be awesome.
And that, like, you can, like... One of the things that, like, Joel can do is he can, like... have a clicker attack Drake somehow.
And Drake could call in an army of...
The really...
People he's murdered.
The really shitty thing is that Drake... Like, if Drake was to fight, like, Joel, Drake would have, like, thousands of bullets, like, every weapon, and there's Joel with his pistol...
And six
bullets.
Also, Drake can't die... But Joel can die pretty easily.
Well, Joel really can't die either. He didn't die in the game. There was the one time...
He didn't die
but,
in the game.
Oh my god.
In my game, he died a couple of hundred
he did
times.
Die. But one of my favorite parts of The Last of Us...
Because we're not talking about The Last of Us right now.
Was when he gets wounded really bad. Oh my god.
Drake
oh,
got wounded really bad.
Too. Not, it's not, it wasn't the same feeling.
But Drake got wounded. Like,
yeah.
He got, like, wrecked, like, 5 times.
And he still killed, like, a village.
Like, he got shot in the chest with a 50 cal round and then, like, bled out all over the train. And then there was that time when he got, like, knocked out and he was in that village. Like,
and he just self heals.
No, he had to get healed.
Anyways, back on topic.
You're acting like no one ever gets hurt in games.
All of these games really... No, it's different in The Last of Us.
But why is it different?
It's different because you are literally... You are... Your character, the main character you've been playing as the whole game...
Kind of like Nathan Drake.
...is so wounded that you can no longer play as that character.
Oh.
And you have to play as another character to aid them.
Okay.
And you are literally that taken part. Out of the role. And it... And You feel, I mean, I never felt in Uncharted when I got wounded a sense of, like, powerlessness. And I
never
also
get to play as Sully.
They also,
sad.
They also, did this thing where, they made you at least for a while think that Joel was dead. And I thought he was dead. Like, until, for a while, I was just like, shit, the rest of the game, just gonna be playing as Ellie.
That's an awesome thing.
And that was really... it was awesome, but I was like, shit, Joel's dead. Like, I was sad that he was dead.
I don't know, man. I mean... Yeah, that was pretty weird, actually. I agree.
So... And that... But that was really cool, because...
Because Joel was dead? It's cool.
Yeah. So anyways, there's these games... These three are games that really pushed... the medium.
Of games.
Of art in general. So, first...
Arguably.
I think... Let's talk about Spec Ops.
We should do them in chronological order.
So, Spec Ops...
Did that come out before The Walking Dead game?
It concluded before The Walking Dead game.
Okay. Then we'll do that one. Oh, there was DLC, so...
No, it's not just... But also, since it was... the fifth episode, I think, came out after Spec Ops. But the first episode might have come out before Spec Ops.
I think it did. So, I'm pretty sure I played it on my laptop a long time ago.
So...
Anyway.
Spec Ops The Line. Made by Jaeger. Great group of guys over in the other continent.
Do you even know them? Because I don't think you do. Met a bunch of them at GDC.
I did not meet them. Where are they from?
I don't remember.
Aren't they from, like, Norway?
It's somewhere in Europe.
Yeah.
For sure. Yep. They were giving a production talk.
Big country. We sound like a bunch of dumb Americans.
We are a bunch of dumb Americans.
Yeah. And Spec Ops The Line, placed you in the role of Nolan North.
That's what I was gonna say if you didn't. You play as Nolan North dressed in a soldier suit.
You really do.
Kind of similar to who's Nathan Drake. No, actually, no, his character is much more nuanced than Drake's. Like, the performance Nolan North gives in that game makes Nathan Drake's performance look pretty bad.
Not bad. They're very different.
But, yeah, but, like, I
this
feel
is,
like
this
so this much
is Nolan
better.
North playing, like,
a real character.
While
with
in,
emotions
while,
and feelings.
While in Uncharted, it's Nolan North playing Harrison Ford.
Ooh, that's a good comparison. One of my favorite actors, and Nolan North.
So,
yeah, I thought Sully was the Harrison Ford in that relationship. He's more like the Luke Skywalker.
No, Sully is,
The Chewbacca.
Sully's Chewbacca.
Okay, anyway, these analogies are taking us way too far.
Sully is Luke.
Okay, Sully's Luke, you heard it here first.
And then, Elaine... Is Leia.
Is Leia. And the guy who gets shot is Chewbacca.
Darth Vader.
Darth Vader. Oh.
Nathan's father.
Nathan's okay, then.
So anyways, Spec Ops The Line, you play as Nolan North. I don't remember his real name, even.
Really? You just played the game, and you remember his name?
It's June.
Oh, man. I'm not even gonna...
You're looking for Conrad the whole
you
time.
You are looking. You're looking for John Conrad.
John Conrad. And you
but
play...
But you can't remember the name of the main character.
You can never say it.
Oh, I'm not even going to tell it to you because I'm so disappointed. You can find it out on your own.
I'm gonna have to look this up.
This is really disappointing.
So he's a really well done character, and
he is. And his squad mates.
So well. Yeah. So essentially, for those who haven't played, so we're just gonna spoil it.
We're gonna spoil the whole game.
You start out in a really interesting location. I thought Dubai.
The whole game is in Dubai.
The whole game's in Dubai.
You start out in Dubai, and you end the game in Dubai.
I didn't mean it like that. Like, I meant, like, I thought it was really interesting that they chose Dubai, because I can't even think of another game that was like, let's have our game in Dubai.
And Dubai's a really good
Let's have it be
setting.
After... The one thing that is the same amongst all three of these games is you're in an apocalyptic setting.
Of sorts, yeah. Different kinds of apocalypse.
Yeah, this
Although
one...
Although I'd say that... It's a little bit of a stretch to say it for the Spec Ops.
Dubai is in an apocalypse.
Dubai is in a localized sandstorm that has pretty much destroyed the city, which is an odd thing to think about. But the city's been destroyed, and you're looking for a John Conrad who is.
Well, you're really looking for his whole unit.
You're looking for a bunch of American soldiers that were sent to aid in the. Relief and defense efforts in Dubai, and
you find
trying to find out what's going on with that mess, and also report. Like, you're pretty much there to just recon the whole thing and figure out what the heck just happened. And you spend a good portion of the game trying to figure that out. Story wise, like, that's pretty much it. Like, you're trying to find out what happened, and then. You do.
Martin Walker. You play as Martin Walker.
Yes, Walker is Walker. His name.
I wouldn't have remembered that.
They only say it every other 5 seconds.
Walker!
I need ammo!
Yeah, so...
Anyway.
Your squad is really cool in that game, too.
Yeah, you have two AI companions who can never be controlled by humans, which I actually really liked.
Yeah, they were well done, though. And they actually helped. It was Lugo, and the other one.
Careful what you say here.
Oh, no, I don't. I just don't remember his name.
Uh-huh.
Essentially, as you're going through the game, you kind of stumble more and more into what's going on and what is apparent.
It's kind of like a mystery game.
Yeah.
Which is really weird.
What's apparent is that the 33rd that you're looking for has gone rogue, and they're essentially trying to be a government group, and they're...
Or are they?
Or that's what it appears to be. And that they're abusing civilians. And as you go through the game, you start to believe, you as the player believe this, and there's the turning point of the game, which for me this was a point of the game where I was trying to fight against the game, and that hadn't really happened to me before, but since then it's happened to me again with The Last of Us, and so
it's an interesting thing when a game. Has motives different than your own.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it works really well, and sometimes it fails miserably.
But Spec Ops and The Last of Us, I think, both do it very beautifully.
It's definitely better than I've seen it before.
So in Spec Ops...
It can still be awkward, though.
What you have to do is you essentially have to gas what you believe are a bunch of soldiers.
Gas?
Or isn't that essentially what you're doing? You're sending down a... You explain it, since you're the military
expert. Are you talking about the white phosphorus?
The white phosphorus.
White phosphorus is a highly flammable explosive that you load into grenades.
Okay.
And you're at this, like, vantage point where you are over an enemy camp, and there's a grenade launcher that is equipped with white phosphorus grenades, and in order to make your way through and clear out the camp, the main character, who you're playing as, Walker, decides that you should use the white phosphorus to clear out the camp. White phosphorus, however, is kind of a terrible thing. It's pretty much banned in most military use because it's essentially dropping, like, burning metal on people. I mean, it just instantly vaporizes things. It's like napalm, but localized to a grenade. It's really, really terrible if it doesn't kill you instantly. Which, as a, like, flammable-type substance, if you're inside a vehicle or something, like, it might not kill you, but it'll definitely mess up your day. So it's pretty bad stuff. It's kind of banned by the Geneva Convention, I'm pretty sure. And generally, you don't do it, but in this situation, the character, Walker, decides it's necessary. And you, as the player, have to agree. You can try and fight it, but you can't. The game will not let you. Like, you must... And there's no way around it. I mean, story-wise, as well as mechanics-wise, like, you can't get past it even if you wanted to. There is no other outcome. And the game will prevent you from moving on until you do. You can't fight your way past them otherwise.
So you have to do this, and then after you do it, you're walking along, and...
Well, you walk... The first thing they do after you fire off White Phosphorus and destroy the entire area, which, in my opinion, they did really well, because they make it feel very game-like and Call of Duty-like. It feels very much like I'm dropping bombs on people. Like, it's very AC-130-esque, if you remember from Call of Duty 4. Anybody that played that, like... You have a camera view, and you're dropping the White Phosphorus.
Well, and you feel like very detached. You feel like you're completing a goal.
Yeah, and it's very detached from, like, what's going on. But then they decide, the game decides to make you walk through what you just did, which I thought was brilliant just by itself. I was like, as soon as they, like, drop you down, and they're like, okay, now you're done shooting off that White Phosphorus, now go walk through the burning wreckage of what you just did. And, like, you hear people screaming, and, like, bodies burning, and... dead soldiers everywhere, and you're like, wow, this was some really bad carnage.
And then you notice the real turning point there, which is there were a bunch of civilians.
Well, you reach them. Find them all taking shelter under some sort of bridge or cover or something, and there were like 30 civilians you just totally wrecked.
Yeah.
And they're all dead.
Yeah.
And of course there's like, this, I thought this was a little cheesy, like the woman and her child thing. I was like, I get what they're doing to try and bring the impact, but it was a little obvious.
But it was still very
powerful. But it was really powerful. Yeah, I agree. Like, I just thought it was a little, like, troped to have the woman and the child, like, the two really innocents.
So from there, the game really gets interesting, and you start thinking that the 33rd is just awful. And you're constantly, you will do anything you can to get to Conrad. And so, there's, like, a couple scenes, like, the most memorable scene for me, and we'll get back to this in a sec, is when the people, you see these two civilians who are being hanged, and, the 33rd at that point is basically being, like, well, Conrad really is being, like, okay, you don't have to fight us, but then if you don't, then those people are gonna die, so you decide to fight them, and,
Are you talking about the two that are hanging from the bridge?
Yeah.
Right. And Conrad calls you on the radio, and he says, you gotta choose, one lives, or one must live, and one must die.
Yeah.
You decide, or my men are gonna snipe you.
Yeah, and so... And so that's like, oh, what do I do? And then you're always talking to Conrad, and eventually, you get to the end point, which is, you're at, essentially, like, Conrad's castle. It's the hotel, or wherever he's been reporting orders from. But the big twist is... You can talk about this.
No, you got it. It's been a while since I played it, so I remember all the details.
I'm pretty sure when you get there, like, he's dead.
He is dead.
And,
That's the twist. That's you the get twist. There and he's dead.
There
but,
is, but...
But the character doesn't realize.
Yeah.
That's the really cool twist, is that the character doesn't realize something.
And the player was always seeing things from the character's perspective. And there's little hints.
There's lots of hints.
There's lots of hints...
They go back and show you all of the hints. Like, you'll notice, because in that end sequence, when you realize Conrad's been dead the whole time, and you've really become what you thought he was, like, by doing the things you did.
Yeah.
They show you all these times where your companions were, like, they said things that made sense, kind of, but they also were very, like, what are you doing?
Because you would yell at them, for talking back, and they would be like, all right, sir, but they knew
they you questioned were, they, the fact that you were making the decisions you were. Like, and you find out that the radio that you were talking to Conrad on the whole time, no batteries, didn't work at all. Like, you've been making it all up in your head, which is really an interesting thing, because you don't see that in games a lot.
You never hear anything talk about, or anyone talk about PTSD.
Or just, like, watching characters descend into a weird mental state.
Into the Heart of Darkness.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
That's the book it's based off.
I know. It's okay. It's also a good movie.
I haven't seen the movie. You
should watch it. Like, it's cool to see a game where they discuss a character who is descending into a weird mental state and, like, in an interesting way. The other thing that I really liked that they did was, as you progress through the game, you can see the mental deterioration of the character through the way that the character model changes as they become more and more, like...
Not that. I didn't realize that.
Oh, as if you look at Walker's character model throughout the game, he becomes more and more disheveled. Like, when he starts off, he has a full pristine uniform. As you get further along, though, it gets dirtier, bloodier, and, like, he loses the sleeves. That's the really big thing you'll notice, is the sleeves on his uniform are gone. The equipment on his uniform starts dropping off. Like, lots of, like, he's, if you, you should do, after we're done, you should, like, look this up and see, like, do a side-by-side comparison of his character model at the beginning and at the end. It's amazing the transition that they did. And then also, you'll notice the lines that are spoken by the Walker character get progressively more and more angry and terse. Like, in the beginning, he'll say things that are very supportive to his teammates, like, I need cover over here, or, like, keep suppressing them. Like, but then towards the end,
he's directing them and not, like...
And he swears a lot more, he's a lot more terse, his voice sounds a lot more raggedy. Like, he's very angry.
It's just really interesting. Like, the scene I mentioned earlier where you have the choice between this person and this person, it goes back and shows you that they were both dead already. They weren't actual real people. You weren't making any type of moral choice. And that the 33rd was actually still protecting. They didn't go rogue.
No, they were trying to get people out as best they could. Some elements of them did go rogue. Like, there were bad people there, but not everybody was bad.
Yeah.
And you were definitely the worst.
Yeah.
But
it all is supported through the gameplay of what is, like, essentially the normal troped third-person shooter of you go from point to point, plowing down all the enemies, and getting some, like, reward through, like, a cutscene or something. And they really turned it on its head because you weren't the hero, you were the villain, really.
You became the villain.
Yeah.
I mean, through a lack of information and the stresses of the situation you were in, you began doing things that made less and less sense, even that you realized as you were doing them.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really, like, great game. I mean, even without that plot twist thing, like, there's so many good things in that game that it does. Just, like, showing a character's growth, or decay in this case. Just, I don't know. It showed a lot of things you can do with characters and how characters interact that I hadn't seen before.
It was just... It was really neat. And it took a really, I think, more realistic take on combat and combat situation. I mean, not necessarily
possibly
the amount of enemies you were mowing down, but the type of mental effects.
Possibly. Although I'd say that there was definitely some, like...
exaggeration.
Yeah, but it was meant to be exaggerated for the purposes of the game. So, I mean, it was a really positive game.
Everyone should play that. Actually, every game we're talking about, everyone should play.
It should be on the top of your list.
The next game is the Walking Dead game by Telltale.
Plus the 400 days expansion.
Plus 400 days, and we're waiting...
We'll barely touch on that, probably.
Well, there's something I really liked about it that I haven't seen other games do, but that's really simple. And we're eagerly awaiting Season 2.
Woo!
So, the Walking Dead game.
Because there's a TV show, graphic novel, another game, and God, I don't even know.
The Walking Dead game by Telltale,
it's fantastic.
It's really good. It's quite the opposite in some regards of the Spec Ops The Line, because the Walking Dead game puts you in really difficult scenarios and tells you to make a choice.
And doesn't let you get out of it at all.
Yeah, and doesn't let you get out of it. And both choices are usually not choices you want to have to make.
It's also worth noting, before we get too far, that it is kind of on the edge of what some people are calling a game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very much a... It's more of an interactive experience, I guess you would have to say. Because
an interactive... like an interactive novel, or...
Kind of, but it's more game-like than that. Because an interactive novel is just a novel where you choose the outcomes, pretty much.
Yeah.
Other than that, in writing class. But, it definitely is a different way of making a game, but in my opinion, I think that the way that they did it was actually one of its greatest strengths. Like, the fact that it was very, very, movie-like in some ways, but with that interactivity and that decision-making, it made all of the emotional weight of the game, like, hit a lot harder. which I thought was something you probably couldn't have done in a like a third person shooter type game.
And the really cool thing about it is the story was very linear. I mean, it was linear for all intents and purposes.
The story was linear, but it did a fantastic job of convincing you that it wasn't.
And linear. The characters were not linear.
They are.
Well, the characters that are with you throughout your quest are not, and.
But I mean, it's linear in that, like, at there's points, two options, converges. And they're the same person.
Yeah.
Just, like, it's the same lines, just a different deliverer.
Yeah.
But once again, the game does a fantastic job
of masking that.
Masking that, because you're constantly, at least for me, I constantly felt like I made a choice that I wasn't necessarily happy with, but I couldn't do anything about, but I was curious what the other choice was, and, like, 80% of the time, the same thing would have happened, but they made it seem as though it was a completely different. So it's really
the game,
weird to describe. The game, but when you see it, it's amazing.
It's the game is a master of
disguise,
making it seem like you're making important, meaningful choices when really you're not at all.
Yeah, like that sounds really bad, but in fact, it's really awesome.
I mean, because in games, it's really hard to create meaningful choices that have a meaningful effect on the game world.
Because you have to then branch your narrative, which means you branch your everything else for the game.
So, simulation of illusion really is, simulation of meaningful choice is really just as powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a little less so, because eventually you'll notice that the game world did not actually change. But on the same, I mean, at least with the Walking Dead game, if I never would have replayed it and I never would have looked up the different things, I might have thought that my experience, and never talked to anybody. If I was in complete isolation, mm-hmm. I may have indeed thought that, hey, maybe my experience was different than someone else's.
Yeah.
And it was. I mean, it really was a different experience. We just all knew what the end goal was. And
you all reached the same point.
The really interesting thing is you can converse with people about what decisions they made, how they differed, why you chose that choice. And I wouldn't necessarily say every choice is a moral choice, but there's definitely some moral decision-making you do have to do, and a lot of times it's practical decision-making. And the other thing it does really well, which is very Mass Effect-y, is the way that you talk to people and the different things you say. And you're always on a timer, but you're always giving response, and that really immerses you into the story, because you feel like you're playing as whatever his name is.
You can't remember the main character of this game either?
I'm not good with names.
Oh my gosh. Well, you're really bad with names. I'm not going to tell you the name of this one either.
Clementine's the girl.
You don't deserve to know the names of these characters because you don't remember who they are. You figure you can think on that. But I do think that their use of time was well done. A lot of games try to use time to add pressure, and it can sometimes backfire because the game becomes frustrating.
Lee,
yes, good job. Lee. You figured it out. But the use of time for the conversations, I think, was wise because it forces you to quickly examine all of the different things you can say and make a judgment call. And sometimes you have to make a judgment call quickly, which adds a lot of weight to things. It sounds like it would be frustrating, but every time I think that it came up, it was really, like,
meaningful.
It made you have to consider the options quickly enough that your decision carried more weight than if you didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a really good job with that. And just, like, the world that they worked with is really, I mean, obviously with the popularity of the show and the graphic novel from that, or vice versa.
The show... Or the graphic,
I know the graphic novel came first, but I doubt it was as popular as it is now.
No.
Because of the show.
Yeah.
I mean, I think more people watch the show than have probably read the graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that world is really cool, and the fact that they were able to take it and make different stories in it than the show or the graphic novel, while still making nods to them both, was really positive. Yeah, it was just a really fantastic, different way of making very emotional content that actually you kind of, you know, care about over time. Making it episodic was really a wise decision on their part as well. Actually, it's interesting.
It wasn't really a decision on their part. It's just what Telltale does.
I was going to say, but it's interesting that all three of these games are actually episodic. If you look at The Walking Dead, I mean, it was sold in episodes and was made as an episodic game. But as you said earlier, The Last of Us is episodic in that it goes through seasons, which are, in their nature and the way they're broken down, episodic. And Spec Ops works along a very episodic line, too, because each one of the chapters is an episode. They use those episodes to break up the time chunks and allow for travel time, but they also do a very TV-style intro, where they intro you into an action sequence, both for tutorial purposes as well as, I guess, excitement factor. And then they take and that's like halfway through the season kind of shot. And then they bring you back to the beginning, into episode one, and move you forward from there.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really cool mechanic, but the point of that is, it's interesting, I just realized that all three of these games are episodic, and I didn't notice that until right now.
And,
I guess that's a lot.
And the really interesting thing about the Walking Dead game, and on top of all of this, it all comes back to the fact that it's within this universe, it is a subset within this universe, these characters in this game, unlike The Last of Us, did not have any real power over the world. They were merely... It was very much just a survival story.
That's true.
And you were making what felt like very powerful decision-making, and they really were
From
an ontological, or from a point of the... From a point of the view of a being... they were very meaningful choices, and
fit well on the. I mean, like, a lot of the choices you had to make fell directly within the Maslow's hierarchy of needs tree on the sorts of decisions that fall within, like, you know, level one and level two stuff, not like trivial stuff.
Yeah, like food and
who gets to eat, who gets to sleep, who gets to live, who gets to die.
And it was all about survival, and that was, I think, but at the end of the day, The Walking Dead game, no one really gets anywhere except kind of Clementine.
She gets another chance.
Who's the little girl that you're protecting the whole game?
But no, it's a very
similar to The Last of Us.
It's a very sad game, I guess, in a lot of ways. Yeah, you end up meeting and assisting and working alongside a group of like probably 20 people over the course of the game, but. Only, like, three or four people survive. I mean, it really shows a lot of the way that an apocalypse works.
Another thing I just realized about all three games is that they're all pretty, pretty good about diversity.
You mean racial diversity?
Racial diversity and gender and diversity.
Not as much. Spec Ops doesn't have much gender diversity.
Not Spec Ops, but...
It's a military game, so it gets a pass on the fact that, in terms of realism, there wouldn't be military... There wouldn't be women in
In Spec Ops, one of your team members was an African-American.
Yeah.
Which...
And Lugo, I'm pretty sure, is of Latin descent of some kind.
Yeah. And so you don't have like your typical
all white dudes.
Yeah, and then in the Walking Dead game, you play as an African American, and the little girl you're taking care of is an African American, and you're with a bunch of people in the South, and the South really isn't that prominent in games.
In Georgia.
Yeah, and the last game that I can think of that was in the South in Georgia was
Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah,
that's true.
And then also in. The Last of Us.
You're all over the place.
Yeah. Like, oh my god. You have every person. And I mean, and
you cover a lot of ground.
And literally. You go from one side of the
country to the other. Pretty much.
And it's really cool.
No, you're right. There is a lot of diversity.
Which is really awesome.
I think it's fantastic. Actually.
All these games, like, I think the amount of thought, I mean, this is all purposeful, the amount of thought that went into all these games definitely shines through.
No, none of them were trivial in their creation. I mean, Telltale knew what was on the line with them creating something based on a series that had just gained a massive following, you know. So they knew that they had a lot to prove.
They were winning a lot of critical awards, even at the Spike VGAs, which is surprising.
Yeah, that says a lot right there.
Yeah, that something that's aimed mainly at a consumerist, non-critic, game industry. I mean, because we knew it was going to win awards on an industry level.
Like at DICE.
Yeah, DICE and that. Yeah, else. But the fact that it was doing well even at like the Spike VGAs, I think really.
The public really liked it a lot.
Yeah.
And the press, too. I mean,
everyone liked it.
Well acclaimed.
And then, I guess really quick, and we'll talk about this and have to continue next week because we're almost at our hour limit.
Oh, wow.
Okay,
then. Well, we know what's coming next week.
We're going to... The Walking Dead 400 Days.
Yes.
Which was the DLC, which is... Really, I mean, it was DLC, but it wasn't DLC.
It was really good.
It was really good. They basically, the other Walking Dead game was very continuous. You played as one character the whole time. But across the five episodes. But 400 Days, you played as a bunch of different characters for like probably 5 to 20 minutes each.
And it's a series of vignettes,
which is what I love the most about it. I've never seen vignettes done in a game before. And so, I mean, it probably happened, but it was very well done. And it was really cool because it was like, look at this part of the universe, look at this part. Oh, now the story's going to come together. So it was really neat.
It was cool to see, a huge amount of, diversity across the different vignettes. Because you could tell that they were trying some experimental things with all of them, as I'm sure a test for preparing for The Walking Dead 2. As well as just, a way to,
Well, they were getting the story ramped up, I think,
yeah,
as well.
I mean, the story for sure, but the mechanics were... They tried out a lot of different mechanics as well, which was cool. It was just... I don't know. It was a really neat, different look at that sort of gameplay, and it was really well done. It was really well executed on.
I think...
And that was your favorite part of it, was the vignettes?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I'd never seen that before, and I thought they did a really good job, and it was really cool just to... go between these different characters, and for those of you that don't know, vignettes are essentially really short stories.
Really short stories
that are usually put together. You see it with like plays. You see a bunch of little short plays that are all put together that tell and that usually actually have some overarching theme to them.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening, and we'll continue next week.